Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Of all the ways to measure the impact of the 2012 election, turnout, electoral college votes, ballot questions, the one measure that may have had the greatest impact, dollars spent.
Spending on presidential radio and TV ads has now surpassed the $500 million mark.
Both candidates are on their way to raising $1 billion.
Super PACs plan to spend $1 billion before Election Day.
And they did. And when you add up all the spending by outside groups, the campaigns themselves, as well as individual donors, Election 2012 was the most expensive political contest in U.S. history. $6 billion were spent in total on this year's election cycle.
Half of that, $3 billion, on the presidential race alone. So what's your reaction when you hear that barely 17% of that $3 billion came from small donors, people who gave $200 or less? The other 83%, large donors, the parties, and of course, super PACs.
All those attack ads, the endless robocalls, those vitriolic mailers delivered to your doorstep every day. What did you make of money's role in this election season? Is it time for comprehensive campaign finance reform? Is it time for that debate again? Or does the outcome of Election 2012 leave you less worried about money in politics? You can give us a call and join the conversations at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK.
Now, we're talking about this today because, A, it's a huge issue in American life, and B, because Maryland Congressman John Sarbanes is in town. He's a Democratic representative from Maryland's 3rd Congressional District, and he's the sponsor of the Grassroots Democracy Act of 2012, a campaign finance reform proposal he'll be speaking about tonight and tomorrow at Harvard University. Congressman Sarbanes, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you. Also with us in the studio is Professor Lawrence Lessig. He's director of Harvard's Edmund J. Safra Foundation Center for Ethics and professor of law at Harvard Law School. He's author of Republic Lost: How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. Professor Lessig, pleasure to have you with us as well.
Great to be here.
So, gentlemen, let me begin by actually just getting your first sort of post-game reaction to this $6 billion election cycle we've just gone through. Congressman Sarbanes, what does that just that simple dollar figure tell you?
Well, it tells me that our political system is basically awash in money, and the question is, how much worse is it going to get before we do something about it? We're citing the figures in terms of the amount of money that poured into the presidential campaign, but about an equal amount flowed into congressional campaigns across the country, Senate campaigns and House campaigns. And the question is, with what consequence? And there's two ways to analyze this. One is the effect it has on campaigns in terms of who wins and loses, and people be kind of sifting through the data off this election to make judgments there. But the other is, what is the impact and influence it has on the way we govern in Washington? And that's a problem that's been around for decades, because if it's mega donors that are underwriting campaigns rather than grassroots donors and average people out there, then when it comes time to make public policy, no surprise that the institutions are going to lean more in the direction of those underwriting them, you know, the special interests and the big money, and away from the public interest. And that's why I think we need grassroots-funded, citizen-owned reform of the way we fund congressional campaigns to make sure the public policy is being made for the public.
Well, we'll get more and deeper into that in just a moment, especially the impact that all this money has on policy making itself, because I think it's a huge part of this issue that maybe wasn't brought to the fore while we were in the midst of a campaign. But Professor Lessig, let me ask you, I mean, there's been a lot of coverage in the past 24 hours of the fact that, say, some of the largest Republican super PACs, Karl Rove's American Crossroads, for example, you know, spent $103 million in attack ads, but in terms of the actual congressional candidates that it supported, had a success rate of less than 1%. So there are some people who are saying, while everyone was crying, you know, shame and foul over Citizens United, it didn't make a difference in the end, so maybe we're not so bad off.
Well, I don't think the problem of money in politics is the fear that Republicans would get elected. You know, I don't think that's how anybody should think about it, whether it favors one side or the other. I think the problem is exactly what the congressman just pointed to. As you as a candidate spend an increasing amount of your time, and the estimates that I looked at said between 30 and 70% of your time raising money from the tiniest fraction of the 1%, you know, the people who give the maximum amount in a congressional campaign is about 0.05% of the American public. 0.05%. So as you raise money from this tiny, tiny fraction of the 1%, it can't help but be the case that you become extremely sensitive to what they think and not sufficiently sensitive to what the rest of America thinks. And that's true whether or not the Republicans lose when they fund super PACs. So, you know, I'm a Democrat. I'm happy Karl Rove failed. But whether he wins or loses, the effect of that fundraising and the dances necessary to incite the same amount of money on your side to support your candidates can't help but produce a Congress that is not free to lead. It's instead tied up with the interest that they needed to raise to get the money.
So, Congressman Sarbanes, I mean, you're the one who's on Capitol Hill. Have you ever felt that you weren't free to lead because of exactly this issue that Professor Lessig is talking about? Did you feel the pressure of money in your day-to-day actions?
You definitely feel that you're operating in an environment where the institution's ability to make independent judgment on important public policy matters is being affected by how much money is kind of washing through the system and where it's coming from. And, you know, it's just human nature. I mean, you can believe in your heart and you can believe as an institution that you're not going to be affected if the money's coming from, you know, a small group of people at the very top or from special interests or what have you. But the fact of the matter is that if you need to raise a certain amount of money for your campaign every 2 years if you're in the House of Representatives, so you're very vulnerable to this, you can't help as a human being to start leaning in that direction when it comes time to make judgments about policy. I don't think it's transactional. I don't think it's quid pro quo. But I think it's the effect of what Professor Lessig has called this dependency on campaign contributions.
And I think one of the remarkable things, and Professor Lessig has written about that, about this in particular, that it was one of the things that's really upended our notion of the power of incumbency, that it's incumbents who may be more sort of susceptible to the influence of money in actual policymaking because you do have a voting record and these super PACs come to you and say, well, you know, we could align on your side, but you haven't really, you only got a 60% on our voting scorecard versus an 80 or 90%.
Yeah, so I wrote about it, but I stole the idea from Congressman Sarbanes because he sat down and was describing this incentive, you know, as you recognize that if a super PAC comes in against you, you've got to incentivize an equal amount of money on your side. And you can't turn to your large contributors because by definition, they've already maxed out. So some on Capitol Hill would turn to other super PACs on their side, and they had to figure out what do they need to do in order to earn the support of these super PACs on their side. So, you know, here's a scorecard. You got to get 80% before we even look at you. So now you have a target. And that dynamic, that's the economics of a protection racket, right? Because without them spending a single dollar, they've achieved the ability of people, getting people to focus on their interests and to vote in the way that lines them up. Now, you know, there's an alternative to that. In fact, Congressman Sarbanes, I think, is literally the only congressman in the history of the United States Congress who has tried to embrace this alternative. He created a legal structure to force him to raise small dollar contributions. So he'd have thousands of small contributors so that if he was attacked by a super PAC, he would have an army of small contributors to turn to instead of another super PAC to turn to. But, you know, we need more than just one or two congressmen doing it. We need a general system.
Let me make another point about the super PACs because, you know, the traditional way that money flows into campaigns has created this dependency, which we talk about. So you're dependent on these campaign contributors. You end up leaning in their direction. What the super PACs have done is they've now added fear as a motivation. So, you know, there's the adage, you know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. That's sort of the dependency thing. But you can talk about an adage of, you know, he who doesn't sing the tune pays the price. And that's what the super PACs are now in the business of doing. So there's also a fear factor in place now to add to the dependency factor. The result is the same, which is that public policy isn't getting made by sitting there and thinking independently about what's good for the public. It's being made on other bases.
Listeners, we are talking about campaign finance reform and what this $6 billion election cycle we've just been through tells us about the role of money in politics. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio today by Congressman John Sarbanes. He's a Maryland congressman, and he is sponsor of the Grassroots Democracy Act of 2012. We'll talk about that in just a couple minutes. And also by Professor Lawrence Lessig. He's a Harvard Law professor and author of Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. But we do have some callers who want to join us. I want to get them in here while I can. Michael is calling from the Mass Pike. You're on the air, Michael.
Thank you. So I heard a CNN commenter put it into perspective. People, they were talking about the $6 billion and the most expensive election ever and what that got us. And, you know, Americans spent apparently $8 billion on Halloween candy and costumes. Do we not think that spending $6 billion on an 18-month election that results in record turnout is a worthy investment? I mean, I think there's a loss of perspective on the amount of money that was spent.
Michael, thank you so much for your call. Congressman Sarbanes?
Well, what I'd say to that is don't focus so much on the amount of money. You got to focus on where the money is coming from. If you had $6 billion that was being spent from the grassroots or is being spent because that's what it costs you to stand up a public funding system for congressional campaigns, I think that would be an investment well worth making. And frankly, the return on investment you would get in terms of policy no longer being distorted on behalf of special interests would far outweigh the investment cost that you're putting into it. So it's not the money. People have to stay focused. It's more about where that money comes from and the fact that right now, average folks, grassroots donors, are not the ones that are putting this money into
the majority of the money. But
exactly.
But on that point, I mean, let me push back a tiny bit because we were looking at FEC data this afternoon and of individual donors, say, now I know that when I say that it doesn't include super PACs, but of individual donors, for Mitt Romney's campaign, 36% of that money came from people who gave $200 or less. Right. And in President Obama's campaign, individual donors of that pool, people who gave $200 or less, 85% of the all overall individual donors to his campaign. So by that measure, it looks like, you know, people who want to give money are, I mean, small donors.
Well,
and Professor Lessig, jump in here whenever.
And
you
think you have to differentiate between the presidential election, where these nationalized marquee races, like we had here in Massachusetts. I mean, Elizabeth Warren was a powerhouse in terms of raising grassroots donations. On the one hand, where you have this kind of viral effect going on, versus what happens in the typical rank-and-file congressional campaign. Mm-hmm. If you look there, you will see that the amount of grassroots donors that are participating there is very, very small, and the effect that has on public policy, again, is tremendous.
Yeah, and so I think we first have to not focus on the president. Mm-hmm. And I think, as the caller was suggesting, the problem isn't the amount of money. But as the congressman said, it's if the money comes from a tiny, tiny fraction of the 1%, then of course, the problem is the distortion that concentration produces, not the fact that we spend money. I think we should spend more money, although I don't want it spent in the kind of way that it seems that we spend it, with more negative ads. But I agree, you know, who knows how much we need. I just know that we don't need all of the money that we're raising to be coming from a tiny, tiny fraction of us as opposed to the most of us or the majority of us.
So let's talk about one proposal that you've both worked on, and Congressman Sarbanes, that you're sponsoring, the Grassroots Democracy Act of 2012. What is it, and how would it increase the overall participation, financial participation of Americans in the political process?
So it's pretty straightforward. It's got three basic components. The first is designed to broaden participation, to get average people into this enterprise of helping to fund campaigns and create a different dependency, one where candidates are dependent on the people. The way we do that is we create a refundable tax credit up to $50 over a two-year cycle. So if you decide, Megan, that you want to contribute to John Sarbanes' campaign, $25, then $25 of the taxes you pay come back to you in the form of a refundable tax credit that you can use to underwrite that donation. This makes it much more possible for average people out there to participate in the funding of campaigns. And there's some evidence based on experiments at the state level that this can broaden participation.
So it's voluntary.
Yes. Professor Lessig introduced me to the idea, and we've included as a kind of demonstration component of this legislation, taking that tax credit and putting it into the form of a voucher or a coupon, where essentially you start off the election cycle with $25 or $50 worth of coupons that you can distribute to candidates that helps you to participate that way. So that's the first piece. Very straightforward, refundable tax credit slash coupon that will broaden the number of people who participate. The second piece is, okay, we're beginning to respond. We're beginning to increase the voice of the people out there, but let's see what else we can do. So what we say is if the candidate you support, if you contribute to somebody who's a truly grassroots candidate, mm-hmm. that means they go out and build a grassroots network. We say 2,000 grassroots donors, people who give $100 or less, agrees not to take political action committee dollars and does certain other things, then that candidate will get a 5-to-1 or 10-to-1 match, depending on certain things, from a public fund. So now your $25 contribution can be multiplied to be $125 additional or another $250. So we're multiplying, we're amplifying the voice of the grassroots donor with this multiple match, but only where the candidate they support is a truly grassroots candidate.
So it suddenly occurs to me that WBUR listeners might be familiar with that because we are lucky enough in our fundraising to have matching grants.
Well, there you go, and that's the concept. You want to incentivize people in that way, both candidates to reach out because they see the promise of a multiple match and donors to participate because they see their voice being amplified in that multiple.
Professor Lessig, how would this shift where the money's coming from in campaigns? Would it be significant? Do you have any projections on how much money we're talking about?
Well, different groups have tried to estimate what a differently funded system would do. And, you know, the estimates go from anywhere of 10 to 12% of people participating in funding more reliably up to 40 to 50% of people participating in funding congressional elections reliably. And I think that's a direction we need to push, right? You know, you can compare it to voting. When we started this republic, only white males with property could vote. And the progress over the last 225 years has been to expand the franchise so that everybody has the right to vote. You know, first it was black males, then it was women, then we took care of the poll tax, and finally in 1965, everybody got the right to participate. Mm-hmm. But as we've expanded the right to vote to everybody, we've concentrated the effective right to participate in funding to a tinier slice of America. And I think what we've got to do is reverse that, too. And we've got to spread that out as broadly as we can.
But so, an increase in financial participation of the number of people, you know, from 10 to even 40 or 50%, as you were talking about, enough so long as all of these people are actually still donating such small amounts?
Yes, because if the candidates, the business model of fundraising changes, right? If the candidate is focused on how do I inspire, you know, the 50% of Americans who are going to send their coupons in or send their $50 in to send it to me, then they're going to be interested in, as Congressman Sarbanes put it, responding to them, responding to the 50%, the 70%, I hope 100% of Americans who would be in the process, as opposed to spending all their time in cocktail parties or on the telephone calling the richest of us, asking for the large contributions. It can't help but be that their incentives and their responsiveness change.
Congressman Sarbanes, before you jump in here, note that in the Grassroots Democracy Act, you propose funding the matching grants and et cetera from new statutory tax rates for investment income of political organizations and tightening loopholes on those political organizations and taxing social welfare organizations engaged in significant levels of political activity. So I imagine that none of those groups look too kindly upon what you're trying to do.
Well, I mean, in one instance, you're talking about super PACs and their investment income, and I think we ought to be able to take something from that to help underwrite a new system. If you're talking about social welfare organizations, some of them might realize that this is maybe closing some flexibility that they had, but on balance, I think they recognize that it would benefit the system overall, so I think we can find support there. But let me give you a very practical example of how you would broaden this participation. And I did this because I created this experiment, my own campaign, where I had to go get grassroots donors. So every house party became a grassroots donor party. You could go to a PAC and get $5,000. Under the Grassroots Democracy Act, you could have a house party, invite 50 people, have each of them contribute $20 using their tax credit slash coupon, which wouldn't be hard to do, right, because they have the ability to do it now. That raises you $1,000. And then if the candidate that you're supporting at your house party is a grassroots candidate and you get a 5-to-1 match on that, you've just raised $5,000 for that candidate by reaching out to the grassroots, thereby matching this political action committee contribution. And by going to the grassroots, you're bolstering, you're reinforcing everything else about what it is to connect to average people out there that you'd want to do anyhow.
Now, I understand that you, as you were saying, you basically used your campaign this year as an experiment to see what it would be like if you followed the model put forth by the Grassroots Democracy Act. But also, just to be clear, I also understand that you were in a very safe district.
That's right. And
would you have done it if you actually had strenuous competition and you weren't feeling so safe in your seat?
It would have been much harder to do. And part of that's because we don't actually have legislation. We don't have this system in place. So I was sort of having to take a risk that I'd be able, by raising these dollars, to get match and all the rest of it. But that's why we have to create a system, because right now there's no alternative. If you want to raise what the average amount of a winning congressional campaign costs now, which is about $1.4 million, every 2 years you got to raise that. To do it, you've got to go to where people got a lot of money and can dispense it quickly. And those are big moneyed special interests. There's no alternative to that. All I'm saying is, why not? Why not create another way for candidates who want to raise money with grassroots donors to be able to do that?
Let's get one more call in here while we can. Paul is calling from Newton. You're on the air, Paul.
Thanks, Meghna. I am listening carefully to your guests, and I'm having trouble believing that any of this is going to be effective, because $6 billion was just spent on this campaign, and the Rove group, etc., I mean, they got nothing back for all that money, nothing.
So does that mean that you're not worried about the amount of money flowing through the election system?
No, I'm not. I mean, and not after this year. I mean, they spent so much money, and they didn't get a single one of their candidates. Well, I don't know. I can't say that as a blanket statement. But I give to campaigns when I can, even though I can't get a tax deduction for it. So I love the idea of tax credits. But, money is not, at this point, affecting how people vote.
Paul, I'm going to cut you off there because we're running down on time, but thank you so much for calling. Congressman Sarbanes, and then Lawrence Lessig, jump in here.
Well, again, the point being, only part of it's about how people vote. I mean, the caller said they're not getting anything for this or back for this, but let's wait and see, because when it comes time to vote on public policy, if these campaigns have been underwritten by $6 billion worth of campaign funding, there is going to be something in return.
Yeah, when Karl Rove spent the money he spent in races which made those races very competitive, the candidates in those races had to raise matching money on the other side. And when they raised the money on the other side necessary to meet Karl Rove's attack, what was the understanding that went with that money that they raised? What was the sensibility they had to demonstrate to the coal companies, the oil companies, or pharmaceutical companies, or to whomever were able to raise this kind of money? Now, to say that raising that process does not produce a result would be really extraordinary.
We just have a minute to go, but I want to throw to both of you one last question, because given everything you've said, I'm sure a lot of listeners out there laud your attempts to inject some sort of campaign finance reform into this system. But, in the past, we did have McCain-Feingold and other attempts. But I'm also curious, there are already so many other avenues that money can take into politics. I mean, the K Street lobbyists, for example. Anthony and I were just talking about before we started the show today that money seems to always find a way. What makes either of you really think that even, comprehensive campaign finance reform can really get to the root of these fundamental problems? You were talking about how money speaks in Washington.
Yeah, well, so the reforms in the past have all been about silencing people and squashing the money down, expecting that somehow you would make it go away. And I think that's a failed strategy. And that's why what Sarbanes is talking about is, I think, the right way to think about it. How do you inject clean money into the system, more clean money into the system, grassroots money, so that's what people are responding to?
Congressman Sarbanes, a couple seconds.
We've never had a system where the people lifted campaign funding up on their shoulders. Let's try that and see if it works.
Congressman John Sarbanes is a Maryland congressman from the 3rd District there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Lawrence Lessig, professor of law at Harvard Law School, thank you as well. It's great to have you.
Great to be here.
He's also author of Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. They will both be speaking today and tomorrow about this very issue at Harvard University. There's more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us because coming up, we'll talk about how sound shapes our brains. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.